Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope your weekend was good. I was at my daughter's volleyball tournament all weekend in Daytona Beach. I always love doing those tournaments. Frankly, it's felt like it's been a long time since I've been to a tournament. This was the first club volleyball tournament of her season, or of this club season. It seems like it's always forever, honestly. A lot of love and compassion to those volleyball and sports parents out there when those club season starts and those seasons get going. I definitely know how insane it can get. Two weekends out of the month, we are on the road, either in another city or sometimes a local tournament too, but it's all day. You know, it's Saturday. Those poor girls bust their ass too. They play, let's see, Morgan played Saturday at 2 p.m., played until 9 p.m., got to bed at about 11, only to have to play again the next morning or be at the court at 7 a.m. the next morning to play again. And those girls, I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, all over the country of those volleyball tournaments going on. And those girls bust their butts all weekend. So shout out to all the girls that started their volleyball club season this weekend. And a lot of compassion and love to those parents out there that are the parents of student athletes. And, you know, try to keep in mind, too, you know, why I'm on the whole student-athlete issue. Keep in mind, parents, when you're out there, it's a difficult schedule those kids are working. They really have them pushed to the max these days, and you got to be careful. You know, I watch my poor baby. She is in classes far beyond what I did in high school, and that's not kudos to me at all. That's all her mom. But the idea is I see her, you know, she works so hard and does well, as I'm sure your kids do, and they just get pushed to the rim, especially when you include sports in what they're doing. And, you know, she's at practice four nights a week, working out two or three nights a week as well, plus studying. And, you know, they start high school at 6 a.m., like they're almost preparing them for, you know, work later in life. It's kind of weird. But, you know, keep in mind, parents, that they're stressed, you know, and they've only been on this earth about 17 years. You probably have, you know, tennis shoes and T-shirts as old as they are. So, you know, remember that, you know, before you're stressing them and kind of even organizing them, and please be very careful. You're not enforcing your own beliefs and your own wishes, or if you will, or ideals into what they should be doing or what you think they should be doing to make their lives better. It doesn't always, you know, just because it works for you or did work for you, or maybe you read it somewhere, doesn't mean it's always, you know, true. So, you know, allow your kid to be the individual. Make sure they have some relaxed time to be a kid, you know, because that's what we're always looking for. You know, they got their whole lives to be stressed out and be working and doing things. So, you know, keep in mind, I'm not saying everyone gets a trophy either. I'm not that dude. I'm not that kind of coach. I believe there should be a winner and a loser, if you will, or someone that wins the game or loses the game. A lot of it is based on chance and skill too, but, you know, they're kids still, 17, 18 years old, you know. Chris Bell, who was on my my podcast, writer, director, producer of Bigger, Stronger, Faster, Trophy Kids, and a new film I'm going to talk about later on the show, Prescription Thugs, but he said it a lot. He said it well on the show, I thought. Look, if your kid is going to make it to that level, they're going to make it. It's not going to be because you crack the whip behind them. You know, you can teach them and provide avenues for them, but hiring all these professional trainers, coaches, look, they will help you definitely sharpen your game. There's no doubt there. But the idea is the talent that you're cultivating, you know, and the drive that's within your child, you can't necessarily push a better intrinsic motivation, right? You can teach things, teach routine, teach nutrition, all these other secrets, right? But be careful, you know, let them live their lives too. Don't push them so hard. You know what's really important. You know, let them have a good time in a childhood, right? It's maybe, you know, the sports is what you remember as being the best part of your life. And I get that, because for the most part, it was the best part of my life as well. But I try to keep in mind, it's not always the best thing for everybody. And even if they say they love it, of course they're going to tell you they love it and they want to play. If you sit down with a kid and you tell them, hey, you want to play the favorite game you love for a living or for college, They're going to tell you yes. So you can't just hang it up on, well, you know, he or she made a commitment. Well, I get that. And, you know, many times we make commitments as humans. But, you know, if you commit to a year or a sport, you know, I'm with it. Stick it out for that career. I understand that. But remember, it doesn't have to be their life. And if you shape their life around performance, if you shape your child's value around their performance based in certain areas of life, you're really going to do some damage to them. I'm just going to be honest with you, because they will correlate their personal value to how they perform. And so if you ride their value as a child based on their performance in sports, or even based on their performance in grades, you can do some mental damage to them. Because what happens later in life when that title is ripped from them, when they can't be the athlete, when they can't be the star quarterback, or when they can't be the star soccer player, baseball player, softball player, when they can't be that and that title is removed, are they going to still feel valuable in themselves? And for me, that's the most important thing, I think, as a parent, in my opinion, is, you know, earthly responsibilities is teaching not only the right way to eat and exercise, because that's just basic, is to, you know, be authentic in your happiness and pursue that. But the value of who you are is not how you perform at things. That's just effort. Effort can be worked on and improved. You know, performance is not value, you know, unless you're an NFL player, really. That's the sad part. They know that. Because of the upper levels, even in college, it becomes, you know, outside of that fun. I can promise you that. But so keep in mind, all right, you know, we were doing that this weekend. I love watching them play. I can't argue. I love sitting on the side, and I'm not that guy either. I'm not the parent that's sitting there screaming at the referee or yelling at the coach, telling him what to do or telling her what to do. I've learned to become my daughter's biggest fan, honestly. And my biggest tip that I could probably give you as a parent, if you're with your kid and you're with your child and they're in sports, I don't care if it's high school, college, or even just beginning or somewhere in the middle, the best gift you can give your child mentally, I promise you, is not you cracking the whip on them. It's not you playing the martyr, you know, thinking that you got to be the mean person so they can learn something from you. I promise you that's not the best way to do it. You may think you're providing some service. The best advice that I can give you out there, if you're that parent, is be their biggest fan. Because when you're their biggest fan, they can't do any wrong. You ever listen to somebody who's a fan of an artist? They'll tell you, you know, well, even that album was this or that, right? It could be terrible, or a song, or etc. They always find a way. The biggest fan always finds a way to find the silver lining in everything that that artist produces. And so if you can become the biggest fan of your child, not on their performance, but on the value of who they are and what they're bringing to the table, then that, I can tell you, is probably the best advice I can give you for sports, for grades, for when they fall in love. Because, yay, my daughter's 16. She's got her first boyfriend, and we bought her first car. Yeah, it gets here faster than you think. Yeah. So, you know, be their biggest fan. Don't push them too hard. You know, don't crack on them too much. You know, support them. Because, look, ask yourself this. If you're their trainer, if you're their coach, if you're their nutritionist, if you're their investor, if you're their trainer, if you're all of those things, who does your kid go to when they need to cry, hug, they need some support? Who do they go to then? Do they go to dad? Do they go to mom? Do they go to coach? Do they go to trainer? Who do they go to? See, for me, I thought that was the most important thing. I used to be that dad. Don't get me twisted. The first, like, year or two when my baby got in volleyball, oh, man, I was that guy. You know, of course, right? It's get the jump boxes, work in the daily routines. This was this guy. And it wasn't good. You know, 6, 7, almost 8 months of that was not good. I realized that. You know, it was affecting her wanting to play the game and everything. And I had to learn from that. It wasn't her at all. And I backed off that over the last 2 years. And man, me and my little baby have gotten so close over volleyball. You know, it's just fun being her biggest fan and watching her play and supporting her and what she loves to do. And I promise you, they want to choose what's theirs. They want to put their own flag in the ground, if you will, right? So if you're a parent and you're making all these suggestions for your kid to do something, you may be doing them harm because you're now limiting their choices. See, honestly, what a lot of young ones want to do is they really kind of want to put their own stake in the ground, right? They kind of want to claim and say, this was my choice. This is what I wanted to do. I didn't just follow in mom and dad's suggestions or footsteps, right? I just did me. And so a lot of times when parents are forcing interests and ideas, it's coming from a bias. Don't get it twisted. A lot of parents screw up there, right? And force their own perception. You must play football. You know, you must do this. This is what we did, right? When if you can allow your child to develop kind of authentically on their own choices and guide them, and sure, if they choose something, you help them stay in it. But remember, you've got to be their biggest fan, I think, and support them the most, in my opinion. Because, you know, who else do they got? Who else do they got, man? You know, all they got are you as the parents. And if they're scared of you in the stands, if they're scared when the game's over, Friday night, Saturday even, and, you know, the coach is already yelling at them, maybe they messed up, the team's yelling at them, they're probably beating themselves up terribly, and they come out to you, and they got you glaring at them, or they got you telling them all these tips on what to do. Try this next time. Do this next time. Listen, man, I promise you, your kid's tuning you the fuck out. He's not listening to you, or she's not listening to you. When you start in your long-winded speeches, back when I played, da-da-da, I promise you they're not fucking listening, man. Be interested in their practice and what their thoughts are. Ask them what they're thinking. What's their philosophies, right? Because they like to teach. And in that teaching of you, you can really support them. You know, that's my advice, man. You know, this wasn't even on the schedule to talk about. I just kind of went off on a tangent. I guess it's true, man. Because, you know, I see a lot of parents when I'm gone on those weekends, and we're there all weekend. We're there with tons of parents, you know, obviously. Holy shit, trophy kids. Watch that other documentary by Chris Bell. Wow. You see some parents, man, cracking whips. It's insane. They spend thousands of dollars a month training their kids to try to push them to these levels, all in this race for a scholarship. You know, look, just watch Trophy Kids. That'll sum it up, all right? I'm not even going to go there on that rant. But, you know, love them, support them. That's the best advice I got for you for your kids, you know? I try to swallow away from the microphone because it is one of the most fucking disgusting sounds I think I've ever heard in my life. I hate it when people fucking do it. But we have to do it. I get it. And then I just do it. Sadly, woke up this morning to seeing the passing of David Bowie. Everybody's talking about it. I have to give him some love because the man was a creator. He was a first timer. You know, truth be told, I wasn't a big fan of his music. My wife would tell you. My wife, enormous fan. I mean, I have watched, now I will tell you, I do like the movie Labyrinth, but I have watched Labyrinth a million times because of my wife. That's her favorite movie. And I guess one of those 80 movies type favorites, I guess, right? And I wouldn't say best favorite, but one of them. And, you know, when you look into Bowie, for real, regardless of what you think about his music or personality or characters or whatever, I mean, the man, he was a pillar. He was a giant. He was a first-timer of so many things. He pushed the envelopes of creativity, I think. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think maybe he embodies the idea of the new age artist, right? If we gave out an award for, you know, the Renaissance man of the century, right? Who do you give it to? You know, if that's a fucking reward, right? If it's an award, I mean, we give out so many that probably exists, right? But if you gave out like the Renaissance man award, I think David Bowie's got to be in the running, right? It's got to be in the top time. I mean, he changed so many things. So with so many, you know, people going to be talking about him today and this podcast coming out a little later. You know, I wanted to just talk about some interesting things about the man because, frankly, he is probably, aside from the Dos Equis guy, I think David Bowie could probably do the most interesting man in the world commercials as well. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of him right now sitting on a floral couch with an old railroad hat on, scarf and gloves, laid back with a teenage pig in his lap. I mean, leave it to Bowie to do something wild. You know, the guy is cool. So what I found on independent.co.uk were 12 things you probably didn't know about David Bowie. So I'm going to cover those 12 things real quick and a little reflection about him and, you know, add to a lot of the love that's going to be going out to a creative giant and pillar of our time. Number one, he refused to drink tea. At 7 years old, he was brought a tea. I'm sorry, at 5 years old, he was brought a tea that had accidentally aged for 7 years. He sipped that until the day he would not ever drink tea. Again, not Earl Grey or anything else from drinking that old tea, although he did become a fan of green tea later. Two, there's actually a spider named after him, a bright orange huntsman spider from Malaysia, right? A heteropoda is what they referred to him as. Number three, his eyes are the same color. Yes, they are the same color. I was trying to be a little bit more radio talk show host guy. But his eyes are the same color, and a lot of his videos, it shows differently. But he does have a permanently dilated pupil from a fight that he got in over a girl that left a guy for him. And imagine that. He was the woman killer. Some odd fashion, right? And a man could... ooh, slayer. At least my wife, right? So what's that make me? Sorry I put you out there, honey. But, so his eyes... And he did have a permanently dilated pupil. Four. Remember, all this comes from independent.co.uk.com. Yeah, look them up. Pretty cool 12 list, right? Four, the moon landing is actually what made him famous. 1969, moon landing, they played his Space Oddity music in the background over the footage. 6 years later, that was his first number one hit. So the moon landing, fake or not, conspiracy theorists roll on, that Space Oddity was what put him on the map. Interesting enough, Elvis and him also have the same birthdays. January 8th, 1947, 12 years after Elvis, came David Bowie. That's pretty neat. Something about the birthdays in January, huh? I don't know. Look it up. I don't feel like typing anything else in, but anyway. So six I thought was interesting as well, that Bowie, when the name Bowie was put together, it was meant to rhyme with Joey, not Howie. So however you say David Bowie, it sounds like Howie, but it was meant to be Joey. So I guess that would be David, what, Bowie? So more like Bowie instead of Bowie. Howie? All right. Bowie, Howie. Man, work that out. But that's pretty interesting. Shout out to Howie, by the way. My manager and producer's dog. Super dog of the movies. Famous dog, Howie. Number seven, I think the most about David Bowie. I think it defines the man. I loved it. Seven, he rejected two honorable knighthoods offered to him. He rejected both of them. I thought that was gangster. I mean, it's just saying no. That's too creative. I'm not going to take knighthoods. And he had various reasons of why he refused to him. But to read about those reasons, remember, go to independent.co.uk. I think I love that most about him. Now, as an entrepreneur, businessman, he was also the first, he launched the first major downloadable song, I would say the first major artist to download a song, which was Telling Lies in 1996. It took 11 minutes to download that song if you had dial-up in 1996, but he was one of the first. I thought that was, not only creative on the forefront of music, but also in business, marketing, and how he worked himself. I mean... just an all-around legend. And let's see, number nine, he was stalked by a 5'3" bunny, pink bunny, while on tour in America in 2004. You're not famous unless you've had a 5'3" bunny stalk your ass while you're on tour. I thought that was sick. That's kind of creepy, really. It's like some Easter bunny creepy shit. He was also... He launched his own internet service provider, BowieNet, in 1998 to 2012 was how long it lasted, $10 a month, and offered, free 20 megabytes for someone's homepage. Man, what a trendsetter, man. And it also came with free Bowie tracks. And so if you had a website or hosted it on his internet service provider, BowieNet, you got free David Bowie tracks with your website. That lasted till 2012. So he's even pushing the forefront then. I mean, I love this guy. And now, 11 at 17 years old, I'll just leave it at this one. At 17 years old, when he was actually first known as Davy Jones, before David Bowie, he actually was on a BBC TV show called Tonight, where he had started a prevention of cruelty for long-haired men. Yes, he was also a non-profit activist for prevention of cruelty with men with long hair. Man, thank you, David Bowie, for everything you gave everybody out here. You know, I'll continue to watch Labyrinth and your movies, and I'm sure I'll hear your songs on those Saturdays when we're, my wife and I are singing together. We tend to turn up the music really loud, annoy our daughter while we can, and sing anywhere from David Bowie to Guns N' Roses to, I don't know, pick somebody. We sing everything together. We got a lot of music interests, but shout out to you, man. We'll see you on the other side, Mr. David Bowie. I had to give a little moment of silence for my boy. Going to the next couple things, I pulled from Vice Bulletin. If you're not subscribed to Vice in some fashion, I suggest you do. You can find Vice on HBO. Please find a way. Please, please, please find a way to find HBO and watch all the seasons of Vice. Find a way to do so. Please. I mean, there's too much to talk. Just find that. Look it up if you can. Read the synopsis. Go to YouTube. Find Vice News. Find Vice on YouTube. Watch the little snippets if you have to, right? Use the snippets that they give you if you can't get to Vice somehow, and research it yourself. But really get into Vice. I love their bulletins. They're I don't know. The news they put out seems to reach to me, you know, what I'm looking for. So a couple things I'll cover that was on their bulletin that I wrote in the thing that I would cover. They got it from CBS News, at least the El Chapo story, but Vice Bulletin is pretty quick on Twitter and social media because I don't really watch TV. I'm not a TV person at all. When I can avoid it at all costs, I do so. But let's see. They started talking about El Chapo. He was arrested, expected to be extradited back to the U.S. anytime. I thought it was interesting that Sean Penn's interview with, well, he's also known as Guzman, Sean Penn's interview with him actually helped us track him. He's 58 years old. He was recaptured Friday. He's been on the run for months. I think it was since July. He actually broke out of jail. You know, I'll tell you, yeah, it was the Sinaloa cartels, what he runs, but he was in a maximum security jail at Altiplano Jail where he escaped in July. Yep. You know how he escaped, in case you didn't know. A tunnel was dug to him, to his shower cell to get him out. Now, how much money does somebody have to pay you to dig a tunnel that far, that long, to serve? How many tries does that take? Holy shit. So he breaks out that way. You know what I thought was fucking crazy is that he breaks out of jail, maximum security jail, breaks out of this prison, tweets death threats to a presidential candidate and lives to tell about it. That's crazy. You got to be a powerful man. Anyway, I don't want to talk much about that. I'm not getting involved in that. But look, they recaptured him. Hell, he may have wanted to be recaptured. Who knows? But the Sean Penn interview, go watch that if you can. He interviewed Guzman, and it was pretty wild, some of the stuff that he was saying. It's definitely worth a watch. But Vice News was just posting that he will be extradited back to the U.S., back to the same jail that he tunneled out of. I don't know if you think he should go back to the same prison. Maybe a different one. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, man. It's a scary thing, man. Some people are really connected, but moving on to something else that I think is scarier. No offense, El Chapo, but I think this is scarier than you, is the new police threat calculation software. Okay, you got to go to Vice News to check this stuff out. It is, now they got the story from the Washington Post, right? But it's a program used by the police currently in Fresno, California, right? And it scores a suspect's potential now, in quotes, for violence using data points like arrest reports, property records. Now get this. In social media postings. Social media postings are now going to be, are included in Fresno, California's police department when they do a scan with this software of you. And it combines your police reports, property records, even your property records. Now, is property records fair? So they scan you by a property record. So whether I've owned property or whether I do not own property or what section of the town I may live in. So you're going to now factor in my arrest report in the area of the town that I live in or whether I own property or not. And you're going to factor that with my social media postings? What happens if someone's just sharing news Are all those postings going to be correlated into who they are? That's some scary shit, man. And so one Fresno, California civil rights lawyer has described it as a very unrefined, gross technique. I think it's a violation of civil rights, don't you? I mean, the Washington Post is where they got the story, and you can find more if you go to vice.com. Just read the morning bulletin that I was talking about. They tweet that. Look up Vice News. They'll tweet the morning bulletin, but that's where the El Chapo story came from. And this new one, I mean, a new police threat calculated program source billions of data points, including arrest reports, property records, commercial databases, deep web searches, and the man's social media postings. It calculated his threat level in the highest three colored coded score, a bright red warning. Holy shit, man. Got computers. This is some RoboCop shit. The man had a firearm conviction and gang association, so out of caution, police called a negotiator. The suspect surrendered, and the police said intelligence helped the man make the right call. It turned out he had a gun. A national debate has played out over mass surveillance of the National Security Agency. A new generation of technology, such as Beware software being used in Fresno, has given local law enforcement officers unprecedented power to peer into the lives of citizens. Police officers say such tools can provide critical information that can help uncover terrorists. Here we go again. Terrorist plots and shootings. The last, holy shit. The last year's attacks in Paris. So they're using all of this idea. See, here we go again. It's the same way the Patriot Act came to be, right? Let's scare you into giving away your freedoms. We need to be able to scan your personal life and combine it with your social media postings, your property earnings, holdings, and locations, and your arrest reports to be able to determine what three color-coded threat you are. So three colors. That means all people fit into three codes of threats. This is dangerous, people. So I can put you in a, wow, man, what a, wow. I mean, technology is amazing, right? It goes both ways. I mean, there's great benefits in this, it to a way, but man, we get scary, right? What's your initial reaction? I don't know, man. Mine is like, no, violation of civil rights. Just scan me and judge me into a point of a threat level. What if the computer system has a glitch, right? What if, man, no, I'm not going to get into what if. That's just crazy. But it's currently in use, though. That's the scariest part, is that they're already using it, man. Maybe we'll stay updated through the Washington Post or Vice or somebody about how this system's really working. But they're really using the software to do so. Moving on a little bit more news and still in an entertainment area is I watch Last Week and Tonight consistently. I'm a huge fan of Last Week and Tonight with John Oliver. If it's on HBO, HBO is probably it's TV, right? Except I'm always watching on the HBO to go app. So I guess you could call that TV, right? Yeah, it fucking is. It's on TV. So, but I'm picking the shows, I guess, probably like most of society is. So I'm not like flipping through the cable channels, watching commercials, you know, oh my God, add up one time in your life, add up the commercials of, even if you barely watch TV or watch TV a lot, just add up the commercials in the middle, multiply that by how many days or times you watch that show or shows in your life, and multiply that by 12 months and see how many minutes of your life you actually give away to commercials. I did that one day. Holy shit. It's insane. So that's why I think Netflix and all that eventually is going to take all that shit over. But watch Last Week and Tonight with John Oliver if you can. It's also on HBO or on YouTube. You can look those things up, but find a way to subscribe to HBO and look it up. But he talks about predatory lending and predatory loans. And look, we all sometimes one or another or maybe in a financial issue or a struggle, you know, and need quick money or cash, etc. And you see those ads for it all the time, right? You see the payday loans here and there. They're all over the place. Even the Native-looking company, which is probably some big corporation called Native Sky, everybody offers you ways to get, you know, money, quick money, fast. They offer all these nice commercials. Listen, straight up, I wouldn't suggest going that route unless it's necessary and someone's dying or something. But watch the John Oliver special. This is predatory lending, because what they end up doing is, you know, it's supposed to be paid back in the next payday. So if you can't do that, they tell you, don't worry, we'll extend that for you even further. And what you end up doing is you get entrapped for life. You know, you can borrow $250 and within 4 weeks have an $1,100 bill. And see, because it classifies as a short-term loan, they can throw any interest rate on it they want to. And so it ranges on most of these loans anywhere from 300% to 1,900%. I don't care what they advertise, right? It's the fine print you got to read. So you walk in for a payday loan and you could be ended up, you know, just borrowing a couple hundred dollars and you could pay up to $1,900 interest on top of paying back that $250. And if you don't, it can get worse and it traps you. It will anchor you for life. So, I mean, it's amazing how, you know, it can be out there. And one of the just facts that blew me away, right, is there are more payday loan shops in all of the United States than there are McDonald's, if you can fucking believe that. Than all of McDonald's, there are more payday loan places in the United States, all right? So be careful when you're out there, right? They're awful, nearly impossible to regulate even. So there's hardly any regulations on them. They can do whatever they want to you. Be careful. You know, they prey a lot on elderly and military service members, according to John Oliver and the HBO people. It's pretty sad. And a lot of people are falling in debt because that's the times we're in. So, look, be aware out there. I'm kind of a fan of, you know, don't borrow unless you have to. You know, I'm no financial fucking expert. I can promise you that. But one of the pieces of advice I got from my brother, actually, was subcontract out what you don't know. If you don't know something, right, subcontract it out. It's worth it, right? A lot of people speak to that idea. Look, it may be worth paying someone $20 an hour to do your overall taxes for you rather than going to some H&R Block special person. You may want to develop more of a personal relationship with somebody, right? There's all kinds of like personal accountants out there that can be pretty affordable. And look, if you don't know how to set a budget for your family, if you don't know how to organize savings, even if it's a low-end amount, if you think it's just small, sometimes subcontracting that out will also teach you. So, right? So over time, if you're using those people that are professionals and you're working, you know, closely with them, is you can learn along the way because they're going to ask you questions. They can manage you. So, you know, like my brother said, and I do also, I say it in my book, The Cognitive Rampage as well. I say it when I reference mentors, but, you know, subcontract out what you don't know yet, right? Subcontract it out. See if it's worth the money. Now, it's not worth it every time. Now, hiring a professional generally is well worth the money because hiring amateurs can be very expensive and be more expensive than the professional. You hire the pro at a one good, one pay time shot and, you know, you're really tied down good. You know, not to say that people that are affordable are not good. That is not the suggestion at all. But, you know, shop around. But subcontract out what you don't know. And I use finances to say that because this predatory lending stuff gets dangerous. You know, a lot of the times when the economy appears like it may be coming back, money gets easier for people to obtain through credit, etc. Just be careful. The predatory lending, it's worth watching on, at least if you look it up on YouTube, but find a way to get on HBO too and subscribe to HBO. At least the HBO to Go app, because I don't, like again, I said, I don't watch TV. I really just watch the apps when I got time in between reading and everything. But yeah, I guess even when I'm watching that, I'm researching because here it is on the damn show. But look that up. The show's definitely worth checking it out. At Last Week and Tonight with John Oliver. And actually an ex-guest, or a prior guest, I don't want to say ex-guest because he'll probably be on the show again, a prior guest to the show, Lee Camp, the host of Redacted Tonight, a show, again, please look up. I'm just trying to feed you places where you can find competence that at least make you think. You know, they give you ideas to help you think about, tell you what's going on from generally an unbiased or unpositioned angle, which is really what we're all looking for, right? It's hard to find unbiased. But Lee Camp, he kind of provides that, to be truthful. Not kind of, my fucking does. He doesn't really pick a side. He doesn't pick a side. He doesn't pick Republicans, Democrats. He's just talking to you like it is. He delivers the news directly. He's been the first to report on tons of shit and, you know, barely gets any love or shout out to the capacity of what he's actually reporting. It's some shit, man. Probably because he doesn't choose a side. And so he's really basking out there for that 20% of us, you know, I think, that are somewhere on the both sides. We have Republicans. We have Democratic. We don't really have the main views, but we're kind of a weaving, customized version of truth and ideals, I guess. But, you know, Lee Camp He's been fighting for years and years. And so check his show out again, man. Redacted tonight. But Lee Camp, you know, he put out an article on how the federal government finally admits that weed kills cancer. It's worth, I'm telling you, it'll be in the show notes also, the link to watching Lee Camp and his show Redacted Tonight on RT America. But basically, on a state level, the legalization of marijuana has become a sweeping trend. Currently, 23 states and D.C. have legalized it to some extent or another. However, the federal government still classifies cannabis as Schedule 1. See, that's the shit, right? That's the biggest hang-up is now what ended up actually happening was the National Cancer Institute, right? They're a part of the federal government, right? The National Cancer Institute, Research for Cancer, that's what they do. They're linked to the federal government. They admitted that marijuana kills cancer cells. They've done that. The reason the FDA, though, can't move on a lot of these things is because it's Schedule 1, right? That's what I was just reading. Schedule 1 means it's on the same level, right, as heroin, cocaine, as these fucked up really shitty drugs. And I don't want to call them fucked up shitty drugs because they too have positive properties. Those drugs can do good things, but for the most part, they're addicting the shit out of many, many people when in mass use, right? Like opiates, etc. But 23 states have already legalized, including D.C. So the very place around where they make the laws, it's even legal. And now our United States government, through the National Cancer Institute, has finally recognized that weed kills cancer. It does more than kills cancer. They go on to say on Redacted Tonight, even, you know, on how, you know, it's the obvious that we all hear about, right? That cannabinoids, I never say it right. Cannabinoids, I'm probably saying it wrong. Cannabinoids prohibit tumor growth and kill cancer cells while helping treat colon, liver, lung, and breast cancers while also making chemo more effective. I mean, this is the National Cancer Institute saying this, people. It's no more just left wing, right? The biggest argument I've always gotten, I've retweeted some things about cancer that Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who viable source more than anyone else, I would say, has reported some findings through cancer in mice, etc. And now the National Institute finally acknowledges it this way. One of the biggest arguments I used to get was, oh yeah, who's giving you these reports? Who's doing the research, etc., right? This is what you would hear. Well, now it's the National Cancer Institute to the federal government. Come on. Come on, federal government. Just, you've now announced it yourself. Lee Camp has put it out there. It's worth it. Trust me. Go watch it. Subscribe to Redacted Tonight on YouTube if you haven't. Watch him on the RT Network America show. Look him up. I'm telling you. Lee Camp was on the show last year. He'll probably come back on again this year, hopefully. But I love what Lee Camp does. He's always putting it out there. You know, find a good place to get your competence, whether that's politics, whether that's health, fitness, wherever you're getting your news from, right? That's why I try to find sources like Vice. I try to find sources, well, have found sources like Vice and Lee Camp. And those people that I've talked about so far, I mean, find where you're getting your information, man. One of the first suggestions I got from a friend, a buddy, Shane, you know, we were talking at length one night, one afternoon, kind of probably into the night, about this, about life, about the world, the society, etc. And, you know, we're saying, so now what do we do, right? And Shane goes, you know, the first thing you do is you got to stop watching television. You got to stop watching the commercials and the propaganda and the organized shows, etc. And I think he may be onto something. I mean, if you can stop, I think he's right. I think first you got to stop the psychological attack on yourself, right? By watching that perpetual shit, I mean, of selling you chemical incarceration, selling you the drugs, selling you that you have depression, selling you that you must buy this, selling you that you have to travel here and gain this. And when they sell you those things, it is attacking your psyche. And I think Shane's right. I think you got to get away from that, right? So you can kind of find your authentic thinking baseline of what is important in life rather than what has been sold to you as important in life or even what's been modeled to you before you. You know, a lot of times, you know, if you have great models, parents, we just follow roles. And sometimes we find ourselves unhappy later in life because, well, we've just kind of followed suit. And we haven't really asked ourselves why and then gone beyond the why to add to our lives something else by cultivating beyond the why, by saying, well, why do I think this is what I am or who I am? And laying out further things in our lives, right? Because I think to go beyond the why is to then see competence, right? I think that's the connection, if you will, that spreads into it, is we have to find competence, whether that's self-competence or just competence in general, competence in a topic or competence in self, because self-competence breeds competence, which breeds enthusiasm. That's what I like to say. That's a principle that actually that I talk about in my book. My book, one of the principles of change I ask people to and I explain in the book is something I call CCE, which is the principle of competence breeds confidence, which breeds happiness, and happiness, therefore, can be a state of happiness. And so searching competence in self, in exercise, nutrition, in your spirituality, in your essence, whatever, in hobbies, in things to do, and things that feed your mind, body, and spirit is what I say in the book multiple times, though, is in seeking that competence, you can create experience. Experiences mixed with competence and knowledge create confidence. That confidence makes enthusiasm, right? So what I say is the way you gain competence or could classify yourself as having competence is you understand the basic ideas and principles of whatever topic it is that you want to discuss, including the argument to the topic under discussion. If you can argue both sides, then I would tell you that you're probably near the competent level of it. But if you're not willing to have a public debate on both sides of the argument or whatever it is that you're exploring or trying to understand more, if you can't be confident in a public debate and argue pros and cons for whatever it is you're deciding, then I wouldn't say that you're confident in that, see? And also being confident in something comes from multiple experiences. So people definitely can have competence in something and understand the basic knowledge and principles of whatever the core fundamentals of the idea, the hobby, the moment, the past, the area of study, may understand those basic components and principles, philosophies, but haven't had multiple experiences with this philosophy or this moment, this experience, etc. And so once you gain multiple experiences from both sides of the angle, then we can build that confidence. That's a authentic confidence rather than a false confidence, right? A lot of people build a false confidence simply by talking themselves into it. And that's why confident people tend not to talk very much. Not to say that that confident people don't talk very much, because some do talk very much, right? But when it's on a topic, right? If somebody wants to debate something with somebody, or if somebody wants to, argue obscenities back and forth, you really can just argue the facts, right? Because you can see both sides, right? Because that also brings down a calming in your life too. But that self-confidence or authentic confidence leads to an enthusiasm. That's the basic principle, CCE. And so when you have an enthusiasm, it becomes this authentic enthusiasm based because you have a clear and present understanding of the basic principles on both sides of the argument. You've experienced these principles, this action, this hobby, this person, this place, this thing from both sides. You've understood it, and you could even have a public debate about it, and you feel confident in it, and you're confident that this path can lead you to enthusiasm when you engage in that activity, that moment, or with that person. That's how you kind of qualify something based on that principle of CCE, right? Of competence, and why I think competence is so important. And that's why I talk about where you seek your competence, right? Where are you finding your competence in news, in nutrition, in health, in your diagnosis, and in your treatments, right? These are all the things that I talk about in the book, is where you're finding those things at and how to cultivate that, one, beginning with self by searching your why, and then moving past the why by feeding yourself with competence from both ends, be that self-revelation and competence that lays out for you in the world to go grab, to read, to understand, and to experience, because that's where authentic confidence comes from, is authentic, sought out and passionate, enthusiastic, sought out competence and experience of self and the world. Find those competence outlets for yourself. Be a competence outlet. Find them, because when you're seeking competence daily, you can build a self-confidence. You can start to live a life that you're enthusiastic and living, and you can cultivate and make the state of happiness anytime you want to through multiple actions of competence and experience. You can seek out competence to create a happiness. You can go experience competence and cultivate a happiness through living in a state of enthusiasm. See, if happiness is what you're saying you're looking for, I tell you, you're looking for the wrong thing. It's enthusiasm you're after. Enthusiasm creates happiness. We find enthusiasm through competence. I'm pretty confident in that. But that's in the book. That's deep. That's just one of the principles. There's three principles in the book. That's just one of them. And that correlates into an inventory I call the I to E inventory that you develop later in the book. And the CCE principle helps you do that. And speaking of competence, on my website, adamlowry.com, you will, and that's Lowery, or you can just type in cognitiverampage.com and that'll take you to the same place. On my website, I post every month four competence picks, I guess is what I call them, right? Competence picks, mind food, whatever. A place to start that I've been currently or have found competence or an experience, right? And I pick one podcast, one documentary, and one YouTube series. And I pick a book. And I do that every month. So the picks are in for this month, for January. And I'm going to go and shout them out. Go to adamlowry.com and you can find links to every one of these things that I'm going to talk about. Plus a little write-up from them. But the podcast that I'm actually listening to right now is the Aubrey Marcus podcast. Aubrey Marcus is a warrior poet, if you will. That's his website as well. I find myself attracted to mentors of a kind that are speaking out philosophies of knowledge when you can't clearly define what they actually do for a living. I find that cool. You know, Sivris, what's his name? Oh, man, I have to look him up. I want to say it's... He's at Sivris on Twitter. Look him up. He did an interview with Tim Ferriss on the Tim Ferriss Show, and he talked about when somebody asks you that question, what do you do for a living? To vaguely quote him, he talked about, oh, this is your moment, right? When you have to define yourself. And I love it. He talks about it as how it's so just, you know, kind of thought out and displayed. And he likes to respond with things like, you know, I just haven't thought about it much, you know, or things like, I don't know, you know, what do I do? And rather than define yourself by what you do, like I talk about performance and value, I like it. It speaks to that notion of I don't know what I do. I'm just kind of living in my life and doing the things, because he very much goes with the flow as I do. I'm a inventor, entrepreneur, hacker guy, whatever the hell you call it, but always just moving with the world, right? So I try to take that piece of advice and follow mentors and add people and shows and competence to my life. Like Aubrey Marcus, right? When he's not very well defined, if you had to ask him, right? He's a warrior poet. He's an inventor and entrepreneur. He's the CEO of onit.com. He actually writes poetry as well. I mean, just he's a philanthropist to levels. He's just name it. He's a health pert, right? That's a term that I was using last year. A health pert is somebody that's kind of a self-taught health expert. Just an amazing guy with really unique thoughts, but he's worth listening to. He's the choice. If you want to find those links to the Aubrey Marcus podcast, obviously iTunes, on it, etc. But go to adamlowry.com. You can find that one. The other pick is, well, I put it out there last year that it was already in, but January's documentary pick is Prescription Thugs. Of course, this comes out January 22nd, very shortly. This is out in like 10 days then. It's by Chris Bell. He was also a guest on the podcast last year. Definitely worth watching. Look up my talk with Chris Bell. He talked about his new film that he's working on currently, two new films actually. He lets us in on some back footage stuff about that. But we also talk about Prescription Thugs. We talk about his battle on the podcast, on what happened to him during the filming of this, which is just fucking wild. I'm so glad that he did this film and put this out there. You know, he really puts it out there, from the dealer to the narcotics officer, the inmate to the federal judge. He takes a look inside America's criminal justice system and looks at the human rights violations, really, of U.S. drug policy and how it's happening, and how television and actually the advertisement we were talking about really pushes this idea of a country we live in, of prescriptions, and how these doctors are selling them. It's wild, you know. He even questions, is there really a war on drugs? Or is this a fake war on drugs created to think we're battling something, while really underneath, they're really selling the fuck out of drugs? It's a hell of an interesting talk. We actually got into that on the podcast. So go back if you didn't hear it in 2015 and listen to Chris Bell on the podcast. But the documentary to look out for is Prescription Thugs. I have a link to it, to the trailer. You can watch the trailer from adamlowry.com and watch it on iTunes, order it. It's getting all kinds of attention from festivals, etc. But, of course, it's Chris Bell's shit, man. When he does a film, it gets love, you know, from, like I said, Trophy Kids. Please watch that. Watch the extended version, too. Download that from iTunes, etc. Don't just, you can watch the Trophy Kids on HBO, too, but get the full-length version. I had only watched the short version from HBO, but it's a much longer one that you can download, and it's definitely worth it because it really gives you the backstory on the kids, parents, and some other things, too. But big ups to Prescription Thugs. Wish I was out there for the premiere, brother. Chris, it would be cool out in L.A., but maybe do a premiere in Orlando, man. We'll help you throw a launch premiere maybe over here at some of the local theaters we know. Danny McNamara, my manager, the producer of the film that we're doing, we're actually filming a documentary, Chemical Incarceration, Addicted to the Process, which is probably going to be a 2 or 3 part series documentary that it's folded into now. It's a hell of a story. Kind of connects with his show, except Chris shows the back end doctor side of this stuff that gets wild, and his own experience. It's, oh, please watch it. But Chemical Incarceration, Daniel McNamara is the producer with myself, and we're starting that film this year. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we can work together on something, man. But hopefully Chris will come back on the podcast here soon, too, to talk about his movie that's probably going to clean some awards up at these festivals, man. But, and hit us up. Hit me up on the, give me a text, Chris, or a message or something if maybe you want to try to organize a Prescription Thugs release here in Orlando. That'd be fun. The second or the third pick is I always try to pick a YouTube series, something online on YouTube that you can watch. Doesn't necessarily have to be YouTube. It'll be some online series that you can watch. And my biggest suggestion is Politics and Prose on YouTube is what I've been watching lately. Now, what I ended up watching, which is a guy a lot of people I already know are familiar with, Reza Aslan. He put out a book called Zealot, right? It's a book about Jesus, right? Now, he did some interviews on Fox News, which made Fox News look horrible. Reza Aslan is definitely worth watching. Worth watching, researching, etc. Look up his interview on Fox to watch how stupid Fox ends up looking when they accuse him of being a Muslim who wrote a book on Jesus Christ. And he's a 20-plus year PhD research of religion. I mean, this is what he does, right, in his own research. And they kept accusing him of not being able to write a book on the history of Jesus Christ just because he was a Muslim or is a Muslim. So, I mean, anyway, I saw the Fox News interview breakdown on the Young Turks. I was watching the Young Turks on YouTube, and they were talking about Aslan and showing how bad he was ripping Fox apart, obviously. And then it kept flipping videos, right? And it landed on Politics and Prose. And Politics and Prose came up, and his talk, it's titled Zealot, and that's Z-E-A-L-O-T. It's just so worth watching. He gave that talk September 20th, 2013, but he's been, you know, on the news very frequently about refugees, education with Muslims, etc. It is so worth a looking up anything that he talks about, but the one I end up watching was the one Zealot on his book, but look it up. It's just, he talks about a history and a story of Jesus that is based on his findings, his research, right? It's one called the Jesus of History versus the Christ of Faith. That's the one that it's called. He gave that talk at the Aspen Institute, right? Is when he gave that talk. The first one was him discussing his book, but this most recent talk was July 14th, 2015. His book Zealot been out a while. But in 2015, he gave the talk I'm referring to now, but look that up. Please. It's the Jesus of History versus the Christ of Faith. It's the Aspen Institute is the YouTube channel it's prescribed on. But I found it through Politics and Prose. So my selection was Politics and Prose this month. I've watched a few other things that came from Politics and Prose, but the Aspen Institute is another one I would also, you know, suggest you subscribe to. All kinds of amazing competence, real factual competence coming out of research-based, basically, you know, those most researched in these ideas. You know, he sheds a lot of new light on a lot of new influential figures. Aslan does. But Jesus is one of those people he's been researching for the majority of his career. So I definitely suggest go find some competence in it. And, you know, if you like what you find, comment. You know, shoot out something on the video that I put out on it. Shoot me an email. I don't know. Find me on Facebook, too. You can find the Cognitive Rampage, Facebook, Twitter. Everywhere else, send me your thoughts on that talk, on Aslan's talk, or on Aubrey Marcus' podcast. Send it to them. I don't know. Tell me if you like it. Tell me if you hate it. I loved it. I love every one of these. My last pick for competence was, it was a book. I always have to pick the book. I'm giving you the podcast, documentary, and series. And so the book I chose was a book entitled Life 101 by Peter McWilliams. Now, this was the very first self-help book I ever read. Now, I titled it myself Self-Help. I'm not so sure Peter would include himself there, nor my mother. But yes, my mother bought me one of these self-help get prepare yourself for life books, right? Because it says everything I wish I had learned in school but didn't. Everything I wish I learned about life in school but didn't. That's the subtitle for it. So my mom bought me that book, and I remembered it, and I thought this book, I think I needed to put it out there because my book comes out, like we said, in a few weeks here in January. And, you know, I think Life 101, it did influence even my book, because in Life 101, every few chapters, there's a quote by someone that is referenced. And in my book, I kind of follow a similar format of using quotes throughout books, but not even just for chapters. I use quotes to kind of break up some of the discussion and examples that I use through the text. But so Life 101 by Peter McWilliams had a big impact on my life, even at just 13 years old. I held on to that book, and I still have it today. I wouldn't let it go. I think I even referenced the book in my book, but I enjoyed it. I suggest if your kid's a teenager, two books that you hand your child now. Coffee got me. But I'm a fan of giving the, you know, feeding your child competence as well, but not forcing your own kind of experiences on them. And I probably get that from my mom. She did that for me. Heard the little Southern man come out a little bit. I heard it. But my mom gave me this book, and I also referenced in my book, she gave me another book called A Guide to Rational Living by Dr. Albert Ellis. She gave me that book years later, and that book actually seeded, I think, the writing of my book and the future and the professional angle I took in therapy and becoming a counselor. But Life 101 was influential. It was one of the first. I even wrote on my website there, thanks, Mom. But it's one of the best books I still remember. It came out in 1994. It's one of the first books I ever read. It's worth it. Look it up. Honestly, it's the best $3.75 you'll ever fucking spend. I mean, $3.75 to read that book to hand to your kid. Oh, that's right. The two books. Hand this book, Life 101 by Peter McWilliams, to your kid. You can hand them this book at 13, you know, 12. Your kid's probably smarter than most, right? So hand it to them at 10. But hand them the book around 12, 13 years old. And maybe around 15 or 16, hand your child the book Mindset. You can find the link to both of these books on my website at adamlowry.com. Mindset is a book my daughter is reading currently. It was a great book. I read it. A guest on the show, Jeremy Pound, referenced the book in our interview. I have seen this book Mindset pop up numerous times from numerous successful and happy people that talk about it. So I think it's an easy enough read for a 16, 17 year old as well. So I would hand your teenagers Life 101 and Mindset, right? Kind of admits that you didn't teach them everything too, right? I kind of respect that. But go to adamlowry.com, look that stuff up. You will see the show notes pop up on the cave wall. If you go to adamlowry.com on the homepage, all the way to the bottom, you'll see a section we call the cave wall. This is my blog site. The cave wall is where I'm writing all my blogs up. I'll do one once a week, but it's also where I will be posting the show notes. So if you want to find connections and links to all of these things prior, all these shows I'm going to be doing, I told you I'm going to be on the doing the Rampage almost every day, except Saturdays and Sundays, of course. But if you want to find links to all these show notes, just, again, go to adamlowry.com, join the tribe, which is essentially just shoot your email by joining the tribe. You will get direct emails. I won't spam you. I swear to God, I won't spam you. You'll get two emails a week. You'll get one email, you know, when we go live, and you'll get a email of the show notes if you want them. What I'm probably going to do is condense it down to trying to shoot out just an email at the beginning of the week. At the end of the week, with links to all the shows we did throughout the week, with also a link to the show notes as well. So I'm not killing emails even 2, 3, 4 times a week. I really only want to hit you once a week with the shit you need to know. I don't want to overdo it and kill you. So I'm trying to work on that, right? So I'm trying to fine tune it to only give you the most pertinent information that you need right away, which are really just links to the shit we talked about. Not long words and selling you shit, right? So, again, go to adamlowry.com, go to the competence section of the website to look up my picks, as well as a bunch of other picks. I have tons of podcasts previously picked, tons of documentaries, web series, and books presently picked. So if you're looking for a list to follow through the year, maybe your New Year's resolution was to start reading again or something, or adding competence to your life, if reading The Cognitive Rampage will actually put a lot of this in perspective. Once you start reading my book, you'll see why I talk about competence. While I'm constantly trying to provide competence creators, like the ones on the page there. But find them, find the links to them, search them out, join the tribe, and you'll get emails directly to you with links to the show notes to find everything we talk about from here on out. But I hope you're trying to find a way to really be alive, like I said in my video today, or yesterday, actually. It was this weekend. I was walking on the beach, and I shot that video. And being alive, I think, was so simple at the time, and I hope you are. I hope you're just trying to be grateful. Not trying to be, just be grateful for being alive right now, because, you know, just accepting that is competence in itself. When you can accept that there's competence in being alive, whether you're in a shitty place or a good place right now. If you're in a bad place in your life, understand that you're learning a lot of lessons right now. It seems like shit. I get it. I fucking get it. But you got to find the silver lining in it, right? If you're learning lessons and you're growing from the valley that you're in, well, then the competence will be worth it. And then technically the valley you think you're in, it's not even a valley. Maybe there really are no peaks and valleys, right? I don't know, man, but I hope you're just start the day with being grateful to be alive, that you can breathe in, that you can see colors maybe, that you can hear sounds, that you can taste, that you can feel people touch you, that you can touch other people maybe, that you can just taste oxygen for a moment. Because those moments are what make your life what it is, right? I like to say that time, I think, is life's currency. I say that in the book. And I hope you spend all of your motherfucking money, because that's what I'm trying to do. I hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living in a cognitive rampage. And we'll see you soon. In case you didn't notice, at the end of some of the podcasts over the last couple months, I actually have been playing songs at the end, but I'm going to play one of those songs here in a minute for a little love and shout out to David Bowie in remembrance of him. But I wanted to give some love and shout out to George Aguilar, who is always liking and commenting on things. Kamal White, friend of mine back in the day, Dr. Parker or Backcountry Mott, always showing love to the Cognitive Rampage. Rosa Perfetto, another past guest from hashtag Be a Rosie. Love you too. Thanks for being you. Shannon Amon and Christina Rubio is generally, I think, the first between George Aguilar and Christina Rubio. They're generally the first of the two to like or comment on anything that we posted to Cognitive Rampage. So much love and shout out to you all. Thanks for listening. And two in particular, Alistair Whitson, my boy, a.k.a. Theorem. Mad love to you, brother. Hope to see you here soon, man. Friends since geometry, man. Holding it down. Mad love to you. And Andrew Moranti, as always, check out his AM Insights on Facebook if you're not. I love that guy. He was a guest on the Cognitive Rampage last year and will be again this year, I'm pretty sure. Love that guy. Love you, fellas. Hope you guys are taking care of you. And I already know you're living your Cognitive Rampage. But a little shout out, a little love to David Bowie to take us out of here, man.
Everybody knows me now.